Committee on General Government to order, and gentlemen, since there's only gentlemen here, members, we have a draft before us as a, for a possible works. I mean, for excuse me, just a second. I'm going to open a work session on possible introduction of a committee bill. What this draft is, LC 1930, is to require local governments to adopt a regionally coordinated 5-year and 20-year forecast of retail services, employment, and major sectors of industrial employment. This is for land use kinds of stuff. And this is actually only a placeholder bill, and there's some issues going on up in the metro area with regards to urban growth boundaries and that sort of thing. And so what we want to do is just put this in as a committee bill so that it is in the hopper. It's not, at this point, being given anything other than basically placeholder status. And by voting to approve it, to put this in as a committee bill, you are in no way saying that you support the bill or any of the concepts in it. Any questions? Thank you. With that, Chair would move LC 1930 be introduced as a committee bill. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? Hearing none, so ordered. Thank you. Next order of business. I'm going to close the work session on possible introduction of committee bills. And we have a few bills before us here, members, and hopefully we can move through our agenda fairly rapidly. I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2454. And, Patrick, how about giving us a little lowdown on this bill, if you would, please?
I'd be glad to, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2454 expands the property tax exemption for airport property owned or leased by certain local governments to include airport property owned or leased by airport districts. The bill applies to tax years on or beginning after July 1st, 2004. The bill has a subsequent referral to the Committee on Revenue. And though the SMS says may have fiscal impact, we just received this morning a statement of no fiscal impact from the LFO.
Okay. Great. Thank you very much. And as we get started, would you go get Senator Moserly, please? And I'm going to ask Representative Verger if she would come forward. And since this is her her bill, and we have after everybody else has gone. Okay. So, Representative, welcome to General Government. Nice to have you here.
Good morning, Mr. Chair.
Kind of fun seeing some of our old cronies yesterday, wasn't it?
That's right. That's right. All of our old cronies. It was good to see them. We had Mayor's Day yesterday, and so that was a fun time for all of the ex-mayors that are in the legislature. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, for the record, I am Joanne Verger, a representative from District 9. The airport in North Bend, which is in my district, has been under the ownership of that municipality for many years. Now the voters have approved a new airport district, and this bill simply makes it clear that the same exemption will apply to the property that was owned by the municipality, that it's going to be exempt under the airport district as well. And with me today is Mr. Gary Letelier. Gary is the executive director of the North Bend Airport District, and Ann Crook. Ann is the director of the Department of Aviation. And I'm very pleased to have them here today. And Gary, we'll just start with your testimony.
Thank you, John. Thank you. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Gary Letelier, excuse me, and I'm the executive director of the Coos County Airport District. I thank you for the opportunity this morning to be here and offer testimony on House Bill 2454, which amends ORS 307.120. The citizens of Coos County in our last general election voted to enable the Coos County Airport District, the first and only independent airport district in Oregon ever approved under ORS 838. The purpose for this initiative was to transfer ownership and governance of the North Bend Municipal Airport to a financially viable entity that could guarantee its continued operation. North Bend Municipal is the only certified commercial airline serve airport on the entire Oregon coast. And, of course, is heavily regulated by the Federal Aviation Administration under 14 CFR Part 139 and the Transportation Security Administration under 49 CFR Part 1500. As such, it is necessary during this transition that the new district make certain assurances to the federal government before the actual ownership of the property can be transferred. In searching the various ORSs governing Oregon municipalities that own airports, we came across an anomaly, really a housekeeping matter, I believe, that would not necessarily prevent us from providing the requisite assurances to the FAA necessary for ownership sponsorship certification, but nevertheless could put the new district at a distinct disadvantage as compared to other municipality operating airports and tax-exempt municipal facilities. Section 1 of ORS 307.120, paren 1, was originally written to reference real property owned or leased by any municipality, dock, commission, city, or port organized under the laws of Oregon as exempt from taxation to the extent to which the property is used as an airport. A property owned or leased by the municipality located within or contiguous to the airport is used as an airport within the meaning of the subsection if the proceeds of the lease, sublease, or rental are used by the municipality for the purposes of maintenance and operation of the airport. Any property used exclusively for airport purposes would therefore be exempt under the statute for taxation. After reviewing this language with our attorneys and out of an abundance of caution, our board of directors sought a simple change in 307.120 paren 1 to include the words any airport district, thereby ensuring that the new Coos County Airport District and all others that follow under 838 will be considered by statute to be exempt from taxation. The new Coos County Airport District wants to thank the sponsors of this bill and this committee for holding hearings on this issue and ask for your favorable consideration. I once again thank you for the opportunity to be here today and be glad to answer any questions you might have. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Ann, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Ann Crook, the director of the Oregon Department of Aviation. I just wanted to add that we've been watching this because this is a brand new situation. The law has been on the book for many years that sort of defines an airport district, but Oregon has never had an airport district until now. And so because there's never been one, there hasn't been an opportunity to sort of see if the laws work and if everything fits into place. And so the new district found right away that there was sort of this, I think it's an oversight that really, if the current law continues, would make airport district-owned airports different than all other publicly owned airports in the state. And I don't think that that was the intent. The intent was to have every publicly owned airport, whether it's city, county, port, state, or now airport district, have the same tax laws apply to them. So that's what this bill would do. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Representative, did you have anything else that you wanted to add? Or,
Mr. Chairman, do you have a copy of the proposed amendment? When they put the bill together, it's on line 20 after port. It's inserted that is located within or contiguous to the airport. They had left that out, and there was some concern that someone may misread it and that it should be just the property there that's located within a contiguous. And so I felt it was good to just put it back in.
Mr. Chair.
Oh, okay. Yes, Representative Prezinski.
I was going to ask Representative Berger, is that actually a dash one amendment that you have? Was that prepared by LC?
Yes, it is.
Then maybe we can just make reference to it, since it doesn't sound like it got distributed through us.
Yeah, that's. So, okay. So what you're suggesting is that the language that is actually shown as being deleted in line 19 is to put that back in. Is that correct, Representatives?
Right.
That would say located within or contiguous to the airport is used as an airport within the meaning of this subsection? Does it have all of that back? Well, I'll tell you what, let's do this. Let's stand at ease for a minute while Patrick has gone, I believe, to make copies for us. So we'll just... we're not going to take a recess. We're just going to stand at ease. So,
I was going to ask Ben if Dallas has a similar airport district they're trying to form, except our airport is located in the state of Washington. Can we require the state of Washington to give us tax exemption? That would be nice if you could do that.
Now, that's an interesting one.
We're standing at ease. You don't have to answer that.
Yeah, no, you don't have to answer that.
I'd like to hear more about that.
Credit. Can't we apply
to take over the city and streets?
No, something.
Sure.
Sure.
Since we're standing at ease, it means there's no record being created.
Right,
right, Gina?
That was a frivolous question on my part because we were standing at ease.
To House General Government.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am Ken Messerly, State Senator from District 5, and I appreciate your accommodating me. I'm supposed to be in an education subcommittee right now, so I don't have anything to add technically, and I know that's what you're dealing with right now, but I do want to lend my strong support to this bill. Really, it's a housekeeping and taking care of a very specific situation, and it's the district just found themselves in a difficult position when they realized that the present law did not allow them this exemption. So I urge you to support the bill.
Senator, are you aware of the Dash 1 amendments? Have you seen those?
And
you're in agreement with those?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
One other real quick question. Is there a port district down there in Cape currently?
Yes, there is.
Just out of curiosity, why was the airport, why was it decided that the port district wouldn't go ahead and take over operations of the airport?
I'll let the port manager probably can speak better to that, but the port was used to be managed by the city of North Bend, and they ran into financial difficulties and ability to manage it and fund it. So the port took it over and helped them out, and I don't know all the specifics, but I just think that the community felt that part of it was that they needed a broader base than just the port district, because it does service all of, basically, from Reedsport to Curry County. And so they wanted a broader base. And my understanding that the Coos County was as broad as they could go without getting into a lot of legal difficulties, and that's why they expanded it beyond the port to Coos County.
I understand. Okay. Great. Thank you very much. Are there any other questions, dying questions for Senator Messerly? Otherwise, we'll let him go back to education.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator. Okay. Before we address the, we do have one other person that wants to testify, and so let me go ahead and have Gil come up and testify, and then we can ask our proponents to come back up. Go ahead when you're ready.
All right, thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Gil Riddell, Association of Oregon Counties. Coos County tells me that with the amendments, they have no problem with the bill at all. The other reason I'm addressing you, though, is I wanted to, I'd be remiss if I didn't take this opportunity to remind the committee that in 1999, the legislature stated a policy that any expanded property tax exemptions would be funded by at least a 50% by state income taxes. So if you need more information about that, I can give it to you. A fund was, an account was created in the general fund to do this and has not been funded. So it, in effect, is a statement of policy without any muscle to it.
Okay. So it's not something that was actually put into the statute?
It's in the, Mr. Chair, it's in the statute.
Is
it's
it,
a, ORS 306-350-395. The only reason why it's not working is because it hasn't been funded. But it's clear policy of the state to help local districts when you choose to expand property taxes and in effect take money from local districts for good purposes, then the law says the policy of the legislature is to help return some of that money that has been taken by the exemption. two local districts.
So what you're suggesting then is that Article 11, section of the Constitution about the no unfunded mandates. Are you suggesting that this would be placing an unfunded mandate?
No, I'm not, Mr. Chair. This is far below the definition, the limit for the definition. So I'm just reminding you as members of the legislature that this is on the books, hasn't been funded, and we think it's outstanding policy, but it's primarily an issue for the Revenue Committee and for Ways and Means. We understand that, but I didn't want to miss the opportunity, so.
I appreciate that. Right. Are there any other questions for Mr. Riddell, Representative Mabry?
I had a question that Gil may be able to answer. I agree that that's a good policy, but as I'm understanding this case, it would be changing ownership and no new exemptions. It would just change who gets that exemption. And I'm not sure it was the intent of let's use a different example. If the county were acquiring a piece of property from the city, it wouldn't be taking new property off the tax rolls. It would just be changing the name. And I think that's what this accomplishes here. So I don't think it was the intent for that statute to get into that situation, but I'm not sure. I'm asking the question.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mabry, the county, the district is countywide, so in that sense, it's expanded. With the amendments, however, we have no trouble with it.
Okay.
And it probably will operate just as it would as a municipality. But without the amendments, it's countywide, and there'd be some ambiguity about if property were on the other side of the county, and would it also apply for the, also qualify for the exemption? But with the amendments, Coos County is fine with this.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Let's see. Representative Berger, did your team have anything else that you wanted to add besides the Dash 1 amendments? And let me ask if there's any members that have any questions for our esteemed panel. Representative Nelson?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Berger. I'm very pleased to be a co-sponsor of your bill, and I believe in aviation, as you know, and I appreciate your bringing this bill before us. I'm just curious of what commercial airline serves North Bend. I'm unaware of that.
Well, that's Alaska Horizon. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. And I think this is great, and let's go for it.
I might just add that this is really a very important airport, particularly with three and soon to be four world-class golf courses right close by at Bandon, and so the airport is used quite a bit now, which is economic development for that area. So these things tie in very much with an impact. So actually, this is just kind of, in my own mind, just a housekeeping. It was tax-exempt under North Bend City, and I think we're just being very, very sure that they're going to continue it with as an airport district. And we are very proud of the fact that the voters accepted this and put the airport into an airport district, which will be funded substantially so that we can continue with air service into North Bend. All right.
Thanks.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
I would point out that there are a lot of corporate and private jets that fly in and out of
about six a day, right?
Thank you. Are there any other questions? Seeing none, then is there anyone else who wanted to testify on House Bill 2454? Okay, seeing none, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2454. I think I'll go ahead and open a work session on House Bill 2454. Representative Brzezinski?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I first would move the amendments of Dash 1 to 2454 into the bill.
Okay, thank you. Representative Brzezinski moves the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 2454 into the bill. Any comments, questions? Are there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. Representative Brzezinski.
I now would move House Bill 2454 as amended by the dash ones to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Would you amend that?
Oh, I'm sorry. Apparently has a subsequent referral
to revenue?
Yes, to revenue. So I guess it needs to go there. Or did you want to have had the motion that it, I guess it needs to go to revenue first before it goes to the...
Since it has a subsequent referral, we do go ahead need to go ahead and send it to revenue. So if you would have your motion reflect that, that'd be
good. Yeah, I'd amend my motion to pass 2454 with the dash one amendments to with the due pass recommendation and referral to the revenue committee for the House.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Brzezinski moves House Bill 2454 as amended with a due pass recommendation to the Committee on Revenue. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. Thank you very much. And with that, we will close the work session on House Bill 2454. I'd like to now open a work session on Senate Bill 133. Excuse me, public hearing, not a work session. Lift that gavel. It's a public hearing on Senate Bill 133. And Patrick, if you would please.
Yes, I'd be glad to, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 133, eliminates statutory references to the Corporation Division of the Office of Senate.
Okay, and with that, we have Peter Thiekel from the Secretary of State's Corporate Division. And so, come on up.
Price is Right.
And whenever you're ready, go ahead.
Okay. Chairman Kremel, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Peter Threlkel. I'm the director of the Corporation Division for the Secretary of State's office. It is my pleasure to testify before you today in regards to Senate Bill 133. This legislation basically makes two changes to statutory references to the Corporation Division of the Office of the Secretary of State and changes those to the Office of the Secretary of State. What we attempt to do with this legislation is enable the Secretary to change the name of the division to be more in line with our current statutory mission. With this legislation, we will conform the statutory name of the division to be consistent with the other 16 statutes that we administer. Originally, the division filed business incorporation documents throughout the state, and over the years, our mission has evolved quite considerably. Today, we have a statewide filing office for assumed business names. We register limited liability companies, corporations, and other business entities that have been created. We're also the central filing office for many uniform commercial code filings, and we also administer and regulate Oregon's notary public law. In addition, we operate the state's Business Information Center, which provides the public and businesses information on how to start a business in Oregon, as well as providing information about government, who to contact in government, and the services and regulations that the many agencies in government have. Our mission is to facilitate the smooth operation of commerce in Oregon by enabling the creation of business entities, streamlining access to government services and regulatory requirements for business, preventing and deterring fraud through the commission of notary publics, and filing records of debt. The central theme in what we do is commerce. And the leading candidate for a new name for the division would be the Commerce Division. Before we do that, we want to have this legislation cleared through the process and then talk to our customers and stakeholders and make sure that there's no concerns and that that doesn't create any difficulty for them. Assuming that all those go through without any problem, then we would propose changing our name at some future point. That concludes my testimony. I thank you for the opportunity to come before you today. I urge your support or request your support, and I'm available for any questions that you might have.
Thank you. Questions? for, and I apologize for butchering your name earlier. I was reading off the list that you filled in. So, do you have a question, Representative?
I have a statement.
Would you like to hold it for a work session, or would you like to...
Well, maybe I'll just turn it into a question then. Such a good man sitting here. Mr. Chair, thank you, Peter. Do you really think commerce fits? I mean, coming from the business world, this is questioning commerce fitting this. You know, commerce and industry kind of goes hand in hand, and I'm just curious because this is more an administrative function. Or was this your idea?
Chairman Krummel, Representative Nelson, the name Commerce came out of the division in our discussions, it's the leading candidate at this point. We're not entirely settled on that, I guess. So, you know, we really want to talk to and work with our customers and stakeholders, and we want a name that really fits what we do as well as works for our constituents and doesn't create a lot of confusion. So,
other questions? So let me just clarify one thing, because by taking out the reference to the corporation division of the Office of Secretary of State, I see that there's not anything in here that says anything about rule. But is that then sort of the implication, is that you would be able to rename the division as the Secretary sees fit with regard by just simply by rule, or is that something that you would come back later then for a... another statutory change?
Chairman Krummel, we would not see a need to come back for any other statutory change. The idea is to put this in the Secretary's purview and not have a statutory requirement.
Okay. And are there any other divisions? This has already happened, is that correct? Where other divisions, any reference to them in the statute has actually been deleted and this just falls under the purview of the Secretary of State?
Chairman Krummel, yes, that is correct.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions? Seeing none, thank you very much. Is there anyone else that wishes to testify on Senate Bill 133? Seeing none, I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 133, and I'm going to go ahead and open a work session on Senate Bill 133. And members, I would point out that this did come out of the Senate General Government Committee on a unanimous vote, and passed the Senate on a near unanimous vote. If it wasn't unanimous, do you have the vote? Got by any chance? Okay. And this really is more of a housekeeping. Okay. Representative Krasinski?
I believe it's 29-0. I think somebody was missing.
Mr. Chair, I'd move Senate Bill 133 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Krasinski moves Senate Bill 133 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. Let's see. Who would like to? Do I have anybody that would like to volunteer to carry this?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Is it possible that this could just be on the consent calendar?
You know, I don't see why not. Would there be any objection to putting this on the consent calendar? Do I have to have all members here to go on consent, or is it just unanimous of those members present? Do you recall?
Mr. Chair, no. It just has to be unanimous of members present, and it would be it could be an additional motion to put it on the consent calendar, or it could be one motion to put to move the bill to the floor, do pass, and be posted on the consent calendar.
Okay. Would you mind amending your motion, Representative?
Do we need to resend the first one, or just amend it?
I think you can just amend the motion.
Since that motion's passed, why don't we do a second motion?
Okay. Go ahead and just make it a second motion then.
Mr. Chair, at this point, I'd go ahead and ask the committee to move the Senate Bill 133 to the consent calendar for the floor, again with a due pass recommendation.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Krasinski moves that Senate Bill 133 be added to the consent calendar. at the floor. Is there any objections? Seeing and discussion, seeing none, so ordered. So it's on the consent calendar. Thank you very much. With that, I will close the work session on Senate Bill 133, and I'm going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 148. Patrick, if you would, please.
Certainly, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 148 deletes the provision requiring compensation for members of the Peer Review Oversight Committee that is appointed by the Oregon Board of Accountancy. And we have Carol Reeves here on the Board of Accounts.
Carol, come on up. And when we get done with this bill, you might as well just stay there.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Since there's, you know, since the room is so full of people that want to testify.
It's awfully lonely. I don't think you're going to have very much argument or opposition.
Whenever you're ready, Carol, go ahead.
Thank you, please. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Carol Reeves, and I'm the administrator for the Board of Accountancy, and I thank you very much for this opportunity to present testimony on bills that have been introduced on behalf of the board. Senate Bill 148 deals with a statutory provision that allows compensation to be paid to certain committee members. The Peer Review Oversight Committee is one of four standing committees that are composed of volunteer members and serve the Board of Accountancy. And the Peer Review Oversight Committee has statutory authority to receive compensation because in the past they had performed specific duties for the board. They had performed peer reviews of members of our licensees upon request by the board. Since 1995, that function has been privatized, and the Board of Accountancy no longer sponsors a peer review program in and of itself. We now have a peer review oversight program, and we approve programs, private programs, for our licensees to contract with. So there is no longer, there has not been any reason to pay compensation to peer review members since about 1997. It was a two-year phase-out program. Somehow this language was missed at the time the program was phased out and is just to bring the language current with the practice. We've not paid compensation since the program ended.
And you've not had anybody challenge the fact?
And we've not had anybody challenge the fact, no. There are five members of this committee.
Okay.
So we're just asking to have this obsolete language removed.
Sounds good. And are there any questions for Carol?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Carol. Did you just teach everybody else how to do the same thing? We should have a substantial savings here.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, thank you. We don't always have that opportunity, but, you know, $30 a day counts a little bit.
Okay. Thank you. Are there any further questions? Okay. Carol, thank you very much. There's nobody else that wants to testify. I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 148. I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 148. And Representative Brzezinski.
Hey, Mr. Chair, I'm going to go ahead and just move this to the floor as House Bill 148 with a due pass recommendation to allow people if they need to discuss it. I'm not sure the purview for the consent calendar as to how broadly it's being used since it just came into existence last session. Unless the chair wants to have a discussion about your preference of how you'd like to have bills move from the committee to the floor.
You know, I haven't really had a lot of thought about that. If there's bills like this, quite frankly, I have no problem going ahead and sending to the consent calendar. There hasn't been a great outpouring of people that wanted to testify, nor does there seem to be a great outpouring of need to discuss it here. So,
and with that understanding, I'll admit it to the floor through the consent calendar.
Okay, thank you. Representative Brzezinski moves Senate Bill 148 to the floor with a due pass recommendation to be added to the consent calendar. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. Thank you very much, Carol. And with that, I will close the work session on Senate Bill 148. I'm going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 150. And lo and behold, we have Carol Reeves before us again. Patrick, real quickly, though, before she goes, if you would tell us what this does.
Sure, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 150 allows the Oregon Board of Accountancy to impose a fee for delinquent renewal of business organization registration and directs the board to set a fee amount by rule.
Okay. Carol?
Thank you, Chair Cremel. My name is Carol Reeves. I am the administrator for the Oregon Board of Accountancy. Senate Bill 150 places authority in ORS Chapter 673 for the board to charge a late fee for firms who offer public accounting services to the public any time that they submit their registration fee past the deadline. In about 1973, the board first implemented a rule, an administrative rule, imposing this late fee. And yay, these 33 or 30-some years, the board has, in fact, continuously enforced this rule. Anytime a firm submits the registration fee after the deadline, a late fee is imposed, and I believe the late fee is $50. Recently, it has come to our attention that there is no specific authority for firm registration late fee. ORS 673-150 has and provides authority for the board to assess a late fee for individual licensees who renew after the deadline, but there is no specific reference to firm registrations. Licensee is defined as all of these, but we would rather have it very clear in the statute that firms specifically have the same late fee. It is my supposition that sometime in the last 30 years, authorization that was probably in the statute originally has been removed inadvertently or without anyone knowing it, and it simply did not come to our attention until now. The board believes that it is very important to continue this practice. First of all of its licensees should be treated the same and uniformly. Both individual CPAs, if they're required to pay a late fee, then there's no reason why firms who register for practice public accounting should not be charged the same, should not pay a late fee equally. Secondly, the renewal process is the time when the board has the opportunity to review each licensee's qualifications and make sure they still meet the standards and the conditions of professional practice so that we can be certain that they continue to be qualified to offer public accounting services. When these forms are returned to the board late, it delays the opportunity to review them. It delays the opportunity to be sure that our licensees are indeed qualified and competent to practice. The board respectfully requests that you assist us in putting this authority back into statute, where I'm sure it was at one time in the past.
Okay. Questions for Ms. Reeves? Seeing none. Did you have one, Representative Nelson?
Yes, I do. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Reeves, what anticipated revenue do you have for this activity? Projected.
Thank you. Mr. Chair?
We don't have a financial on this.
Representative Nelson, thank you. It took me a moment to think about what fiscal impact. I should have included that in the information for you. We did the calculation of the late fees that we had received from firm registrations in the past biennium, and it was I'm going to estimate the number because I can't remember exactly, but it was about $3,700 in the biennium. So that is the amount of revenue that we would estimate going forward. One never knows how many folks are going to be late with their renewal forms, but that is what we collected in the past biennium, about $3,500
to $3,700.
Mr. Chair, follow up.
And do you have the rights to turn this over to a private collection agency and require the business to pay that fee also?
Chair Cremel, Representative Nelson, we not only have the right, we have the obligation. When any penalties or fees are not paid, we have an obligation to make every effort to collection, including turning them over to a private collection agency.
And if they still don't pay, excuse me, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, Representative, in our statute, we have the authority to take further disciplinary action against anyone who has failed to pay a civil penalty or a fine. And it would require an administrative action, which would require, you know, disciplinary proceedings. However, it's possible to revoke or suspend a license if they do not pay fees that are owed to the board. That action has not been taken, however. Generally, our licensees are willing to pay when they realize that they are behind.
I would point out that this board is not a general fund board, but is funded solely by the fees that are paid by the licensees.
Thank you, Chair Carmel. That is correct.
OK. Okay. Any other questions? Seeing none, thank you very much. With that, I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 150. And as we go into work session, a motion to take this to the consent calendar would be just fine. I'll open a work session on Bill 150.
Mr. Chair, I'd move Senate Bill 150 to the floor with a due pass recommendation being placed on its consent calendar.
Okay. Representative Przanski moves Senate Bill 150 to the floor and consent calendar with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, are there any objections? Seeing none, Senate Bill 150 is passed to the floor on the consent calendar. I will close the work session on Senate Bill 150. Thank you very much. And I will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 153. Patrick, if you would, please.
Certainly. Senate Bill 153 permits the Oregon Board of Accountancy to contract with the National Association of State Boards of Accountancy, the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants, and a computer testing service for the administration of the computer-based certified public accountants exam. The bill authorizes the testing service to collect fees incurred for the administration of the exam. I should point out, Mr. Chair and members, that there is a fiscal analysis that's included in your packets on the bill.
Okay. And there's not really a, they may have a potential expenditure reduction, I would point out, of $160,000 in 0305 because of not conducting paper and pencil tests. We have before us Carol Reeves. Whenever you're ready, Ms. Reeves.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Carol Reeves. I'm the administrator of the Oregon Board of Accountancy. Senate Bill 153 is all about the uniform CPA exam. And if you will indulge me, I will give you some background about that exam because this is kind of a dramatic transition for us. The Uniform CPA exam, as you may know, is a two-day examination. It is required in every state for the licensing of certified public accountants. It is owned and developed by the National Professional Association, which is called the American Institute of CPAs, more fondly known by all as the AICPA. The uniform exam is currently a paper and pencil exam. It is administered in May and November each year in every state on the same day at the same hour. It is a highly secured exam. It is an undisclosed exam, which means that after the exam you may not see the questions and the answers to them. AICPA is the one who delegates all of the security measures and all of the rules surrounding the exam. Currently, the Board of Accountancy administers that exam at the fairgrounds. It's quite an exotic event, you can imagine. However, in April of 2004, that exam is going to be converted to a computerized exam, which changes the landscape dramatically. In my opinion, it changes it to the advantage of the candidates. The rules for taking the examination will be much more flexible, which I believe will increase the passing rate for candidates. It will also allow the candidates to take the exam in any computer center, any authorized computer center that is available. For example, if we have a candidate who lives in Eastern Oregon, and the computer center in Boise is closer than the one in Portland, then they go to the Boise computer center, even though they are an Oregon candidate. And I should back up and say that there are currently three authorized computer centers in Oregon, two of them in Portland and one of them is in Eugene. They are Sylvan Learning Centers, with which I know you are all familiar, and they are owned by a company called Prometric, and Prometric is the company that AICPA has contracted with to provide the computer testing centers. Now you probably know more than you want to know about the computer testing centers, but Sylvan is a more common name to you, and you can identify with the locations, I'm sure. Not all Sylvan Learning Centers have met the standards of AICPA for the computer exam, however. The cost of the exam is going to increase dramatically for candidates. Currently, the cost for the exam is solely the cost of the application fee that is charged by the Board of Accountancy, and that is $150. In the future, candidates will continue to pay an application fee to the Board in an amount that the Board determines to be necessary, but assuming that it continues to be $150, added to that fee will be $470 per exam for the computer fees and the other administration fees that are necessary under the computerized exam. So that's going to bring the exam to $620 for the candidate to take four sections. This is a huge increase per exam, but I think practically speaking, it may be equal or even less expensive for some candidates. And I'll explain that by telling you that the exam is in four sections. One must pass all four sections in order to pass the exam. One must pass them under certain conditions. Therefore, it is not unusual for a CPA candidate to take the exam six, five, seven times before they pass all four sections. So if you consider $150 each time they take four sections, and then when they finally are to the point where they can take only those that are remaining, that's $50 per section. But assuming they have to take the exam four times at $150, there you already have $600 that they put into the exam. Under the new rules, candidates are going to be able to take that exam one section at a time and schedule them at their leisure one section at a time so they can pick them off. They can study for this section, which enhances their chances of passing this section. And when they finish it, then they may schedule the second session for which they have studied specifically. Currently, they have to prepare for all four sections each time they take the exam. They have no flexibility about the date. They have no flexibility about the time or the location. Those are all preset. So I think in many ways it may even be perhaps, if not less expensive, maybe not more expensive in the long run, even though the costs are going up. Nevertheless, the board has no control over these. This is a national exam. It is the exam that is required for this national licensing that is known and respected in every state for the standards and the professions to which these people are accountable. And we have no our choice about computer exam would be to develop our own computer-based station where candidates could come. I have a feeling that would even be that would be out of the question for the Board of Accountancy to do, and it certainly would not be practical. So we certainly request your consideration of this bill, and I would welcome any questions.
Okay. Are there any questions for Ms. Reeves? Representative Kitts?
I just had one question. I heard you say in the amount deemed necessary. I just heard it. I can't find your testimony here. In the amount deemed necessary not to exceed it's currently at $150, but the board can raise it as deemed necessary. Am I understanding that correctly?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kitts, the board has authority to increase or decrease its fees by rule.
Currently,
yes. And if it is deemed that we do not need $150 for the processing of applications, it could be reduced. There are going to be expenses, as Chair Cremel mentioned earlier, that we will no longer be dispersing. For example, the cost to rent fairgrounds. I'm sure they will be sorry to lose our income. It's at least twice a year of steady income, although it's not great. The grading fees are one of the largest expenses of the exam that the board pays out of our licensing fee. We're no longer going to do that. That's going to be charged separately, or assuming this bill passes, it will be charged separately. I went into so much about the exam, I perhaps didn't talk about the bill enough. Mr. Chair, do you wish for me to do that and take some more of your time?
I'm clear on it.
You're clear on it? Okay.
That was my only redeemed answer.
Okay.
I just get a little nervous.
Okay.
I'm very clear.
I don't think it's necessary.
All right. Thank you.
I think that'll be fine, Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Reeves, what endorsements do you have of this bill?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, do you mean as far as supporting groups?
Those CPAs, organizations. who has endorsed this?
The Oregon Society of CPAs would certainly endorse it.
Would or have?
Their lobbyist was at the Senate hearing and was asked specifically if they had any objections, and he said no, they were happy with the bill. Representative, it is their parent association that is a sponsor of the bill, so they would be hard-pressed not to be equally pleased with it. I know of no one who opposes it. We've had no candidates or no student groups come forward in opposition. The exam has been in the process now of development for probably a period of 3 years and has been advertised. Advertising is escalating as it comes closer to the time. We've talked about it. It's on our website, information about it, and we've talked about it, or I have, at presentations that I'm asked to make, and have had no opposition. So I know of no opposition.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
And are, Ms. Reese, are all members, all PPAs required to be a part of that organization?
Mr. Chair, Representative, no, they are not. It's a membership organization.
So how many does that represent of the total of the state?
I would guess, Mr. Chair, Representative, that probably about 80% of our licensees choose to be members of the Oregon Society of CPAs. They, now, may I go further? They may also be a member of AICPA, but it is not necessary. They are two distinctly separate memberships.
Thank you. Any other questions? Representative Mabry.
Just a curiosity question. I think when you started your testimony, you said something to the effect that, they take the exam. Afterwards, they can neither see the exam nor the answers. That strikes me as interesting. Will that process continue under this computer?
Mr. Chair, Representative Mabry. Yes, that is correct. It will continue to be an undisclosed exam. And the reason for that is because it is a national exam. The exam questions are used over and over. And so there's no way that one can have a copy of the exam to review, or it would provide the questions to potential candidates.
Thank you. Just out of curiosity, and if you don't know the answer to this, that's quite all right. But so once the test becomes a computerized test, will the server that holds the test, for example, at these testing centers, have any kind of online connection?
Mr. Chair, I happened to visit one of these centers just a week ago to see how they were going to work, and they're very sophisticated in their security. The headquarters is in Baltimore, Maryland, and Prometric, the name of the service, administers many, many exams by computerization. One of them, for example, are the exams that are required by the NESD for securities dealers. The nursing board used to have their exam through this group. The GAT, whatever GAT is. At any rate, they give many exams, and they schedule them at the location, and then they notify the headquarters in Baltimore the number of candidates who will be taking it on a particular day and the exam which they will be taking. And Baltimore downloads the night before to the local station those examinations in the correct quantity for the next day's schedule. So this location handles not the exams at all. And as soon as the candidate is finished and clicks finish, it goes to Baltimore. It doesn't even stay here. So the web is a wonderful thing. And it has provided us with lots of flexibility that we haven't had in the past.
Okay. Thank you.
And Mr. Chair,
yes.
I do have one further thing, if I may.
Sure.
It's very important to the board that we not be the collection agent for these additional funds. We feel it would artificially inflate our budget, both in revenue that we would have to reflect for the additional revenue received, and then for the expenditures that we would be passing through. They're simply pass-through funds, and we don't want the board to be in a position to have to be responsible for those, nor to be the collection agent and to determine accounting for each of these candidates who have signed up for these many exams. It would sorely test our resources and be an unnecessary workload that we don't want to get in on. And that's the important aspect of this bill, to authorize the collection, the computer stations, and the professional organizations to collect their own fees so that the board does not have to be involved in those excess funds.
Okay. I did notice that in sub 4 on page 1 and starting in lines 28, members, just for your information. Okay. Are there any other questions or anything for Mrs. Reeves? Seeing none, I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 153. I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 153. Representative Kozanski.
Mr. Chair, I'm going to make a motion, but I think I'm going to ask the chair if he would like to have this go to the consent calendar before I make the motion. This one seems like maybe with the changes that this may need a little bit more discussion.
This one may take a little bit, and particularly since we do have a couple of our members that are CPAs, mm-hmm. And they may want to kind of discuss it a little bit. So I would say let's just move this one to the floor, not to the consent calendar. And
I'd make the motion at this point to move SB 153 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Przanski moves Senate Bill 153 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. And who would like to volunteer to carry this bill? Representative Worth, you haven't carried any bills for us yet.
I have one. I'd be happy to carry this
one. Oh, that'd be terrific if you would carry this bill.
Thank you.
Representative Worth has volunteered to carry Senate Bill 153. And with that, I will...
Representative Kremel, before you adjourn, I would ask for consideration for the committee to reopen discussion on the previous SB 133 and 148.
I need to close this work session first.
So, you may close.
Let me close the work session on Senate Bill 153. And... Representative Kitts asked unanimous consent to reopen a work session on. Can I do that all in one? Can I do this all at once?
Yeah, you can.
Okay. To reopen a work session on Senate Bills 133, 148, and 150.
133 and 148.
Oh, just 133 and 148? Okay. Excuse me. Thank you. Just 133 and 148. Is there any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. Representative Kitts, how do you vote on Senate Bill 133?
I vote aye.
And how do you vote on Senate Bill 148?
I vote aye as well.
Mr. Chair, may I also vote?
Since we have it open, Representative Worth, how do you vote on 133?
Aye.
And how do you vote on 148?
I did already.
I did vote on 133.
148?
Only
133. I need 133.
She only needs 133. Thank you.
Can't you just require them to stay in the room?
Is there any is there any other is that it? Okay, I'm going to close the work session on Senate Bills 133 and 148. And let's see, since we don't have anything else, we're going to stand adjourned. Let me just pardon. Yeah, let's let me just mention to you members, I'm not going to be here Tuesday morning, the 11th. I have a doctor's appointment in Portland, so we will not meet on Tuesday, February 11th. Enjoy your morning off, and don't let your staff fill it up with people to meet with. Yeah, with that, we will stand adjourned.
Now we miss the time. Huh?